Do you wish healthy didn't have to be hard? What if there was another way? Well, there is. And it's the Jade Walkaway, where healthy is delicious, easy and exciting, and doesn't have to mean saying no to chocolate and red wine. Welcome back to the Jade Walker Way. You're here with your favourite naturopath, Jade Walker. And today I've got a very special guest on the show who is none other than Greg Korponidis. Did I say that right?
You did.
Okay. You got it right. Good. So the reason why I wanted Greg to come on is because he's not only a personal trainer, but he's also a myotherapist. And having studied myotherapy as an elective on my naturopathy degree, I feel it's something that everyone should know about. It's a very amazing modality that can help people with their bodies. So we'll be talking about that soon. He also has his own podcast, the Revolution Podcast, who I'm very happy to say I'll be featuring on very
you
soon.
You sure will, absolutely.
And it's got quite a successful following as well. He works for Revolution Personal Training, also known as Revo PT. We like our acronyms and shortenings in Australia, in South Melbourne, which is where we're recording from right now, and also Fit Tribe in Melbourne as well. Thank you so much for coming on, Greg.
No, happy to be here.
All right. So first of all, I've got two questions that I ask everyone that comes on, and that is, what's your favorite health food or activity, and what's your favorite indulgence? Because I'm all about balance. Mm,
well, that is a cracking question to start. Look, I'd have to say that my favorite activity is dancing 100% of the way. So I've been dancing now for the last little over a year. This is more Latin dancing. So I do salsa and bachata. And it's turned into a real passion of mine.
What's bachata?
So bachata, it's a form of Latin dance that originates from the Dominican Republic.
Wow.
So it's got quite a bit of a story. It's developed a lot. It's people say it's the easier version of salsa in terms of the movements and their basic step. But it's more of a sensual style of dance, whereas salsa is very, as you probably may have seen like videos, I mean, it's very fast and lots of spins and tricks. Mm-hmm. Bachata is a bit more slower.
Ah.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
Oh, so just a little bit over a year now. That's a story in itself. How it all happened, but I kind of picked it up by, I wouldn't say accident, but I kind of thought it was just something I would just try and would do a little bit. I kind of had a habit I had in the past of where like I always would start things and then constantly chop and change, but this one's actually stuck, so it's become a real passion of mine. I've made some really good friends. It's really opened a lot of opportunities for me, and we're performing, and now most recently I'm going to be doing end of the year a big pro amateur competition. So yeah, really gone all in with it, so
that's,
I love it.
That's amazing. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier over turmeric latte. Now we're drinking Cleanse Me Tea here.
Yeah, which is good. Very good, by the way.
Oh, good. Thank you. You know, coming into spring, it's really good for that, like, detox element. Okay, so, as I was going to say, you know, this is something I always talk about clients is finding something you love. Mm. And like you said, you know, you would find you would start things and stop, and I'm notorious for that. Mm. So it's so good to hear that you've actually found something that you enjoy.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes, yes.
So what about your favourite indulgence?
I was going to say, you'd have to want to know my indulgence now. So I'm a very big wine and cheese connoisseur, you could say. very much all about the wine and cheese platters. So living in Melbourne, obviously we are very blessed to have two, I guess, great regions. I suppose in the peninsula and also the Yarra Valley. So that's probably a real big one. But if I suppose if there was a dessert as well, because I love my desserts. I'm a very big cheesecake man.
Mmm, so, yum. Which cheesecake would you say?
Oh, it has so many. It has to be the New York bag cheesecake.
Classic.
All the way.
Yeah, 100%. Nice. I like your style. I'm a big cheese and wine fan myself.
Oh, very good.
All right. So diving into what you do, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, what the hell is a myotherapist?
Yes.
So obviously everyone knows what a PT is. So let's talk about what's myotherapy?
Sure. Well, I think that's where to start. The point of myotherapist is a form of physical therapy which basically looks at assessment, treatment, and I suppose rehab of sort of musculoskeletal pains or conditions. So it kind of branches a little bit towards some of the other allied professionals, such as osteopaths, in the sense that it's a very, a very holistic approach. I suppose where we would differ from them is I'd be a bit more hands-on, in the sense we mostly focus on actual massage, whereas a osteopath would more focus on actual manipulations. But we use, I suppose, the modalities, I suppose, out where we specialize. And if, you know, you hear like I see a Myo, most common modalities that you find a Myo would use are things such as dry needling, cupping, joint mobilizations, possibly like TENS therapy as well. So there's some of the areas, or I guess different tools, but like all therapies, we all use different tools, but I guess our number one tool, and it's probably something I actually a firm believer, is your hands. But obviously we have a very wide range of skills, but in terms of our skill is purely our hands and our hands work.
It's interesting you say that. That's something I often marvel about, is how good our hands are at doing things, and nothing can replace them. And even when it comes to like cooking, applying makeup, like I, you know, all the tools in the world that I have in the kitchen, like nothing can like flip something in the pan as good as my hands can, like, you know. Yeah. Nothing can, like, you know, apply foundation as good as my hands can, like, you know. Yeah, it's no. Just like things like that.
Absolutely.
And yes, like you said, as a myotherapist, there's just this beautiful thing that your hands can do. So also I want to touch on needling, dry needling.
Sure.
And which I'm a huge fan of. I utilized that when I had a knee reconstruction when I was 21, which I found out you had as well.
Yeah, 2 years ago, that's right.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of it. However, a lot of people get it confused between acupuncture.
That's right.
And yeah, and they, even though yes, they're needling, so they need needles going into this to the skin, they're not doing the same thing. So tell me about the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So I guess the biggest point of difference right away is the theory, first of all. So dry needling actually came from Chinese medicine, or acupuncture, first of all. So acupuncture has been around for a very long time. And acupuncture, the theory along that goes along with qis and energy, which in some ways is where, and this is where I suppose it does branch or get a little bit different, because when you think of dry needling is purely in relation to the muscles, which is what a myotherapist looks at, myo being muscle. So how a myotherapist would use dry needling is they use it more for releasing muscles and actually getting a twitch or a response as well. So the theory of dry needling is very straightforward, in the sense that if I have, let's say, you mentioned about a reconstruction, if I had a tight quadricep or thigh muscles, by using this needle, the needle is going to be going to activate the muscle, get it to engage, and it's going to release it. And that goes a little bit more into when, you know, let's say, in other words, if you have like a knot or a tight spot, the needle is going to release that area. So it's a very straightforward theory. There's really, whereas with acupuncture, and look, it's probably not something I don't know a whole extent of, very extensive about, because obviously I'm not an acupuncturist, but a lot of their theory goes along with energy. And you know, I've, you know, areas, for example, if you know, needling some area in your foot's going to make something up where your headache go away or something. And it's a bit, maybe not exactly like that, it's probably a little extreme, but the theory goes, it's a little bit different. So yeah, so if you had to ask what the main difference, one is directly using for treatment of muscles, muscles, tendons, whatnot, whereas acupuncture is a little bit different, and it kind of goes more in that sort of old sort of like Chinese-based sort of medicine, in terms of regards to like energy levels and qi levels and whatnot.
Yeah, and because I have experienced both and they're totally different. So, yeah. For example, I had acupuncture for period pain and I had some needles put in my feet.
Yes.
So for people that don't understand how it works, they'll be like, why? That's not where we're working on. Why do I have needles in my feet? Like, and However, when they're working on the chi and moving that chi energy, and I personally don't understand it 100% either, but however, at the very least, I came out of that session feeling like I was floating on a cloud. Like, it was incredible. Then on the flip side, I've had dry needling, and like you said, it's targeted to where you need to work on. And at the same time, that also helped as well.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good point you mentioned about the needling. That's probably one of the other big things. It's actually the response as well, because everyone can respond to it really differently as well. I mean, I've had... it's actually the best way I got to experience is studying it, because when I actually studied dry needling, the subjects itself, I mean, I'm talking about 3-4 hours, 2-3 days a week, just purely getting needling all over my body. So I've literally been needled everywhere, and I can tell. And the response is, it was amazing that in some areas, like you said, you would respond like you felt like you're on a cloud. Other days, I'd respond on it and I instantly actually felt the difference right away. And there are others where, like, I was actually sore as for a couple of days later. So it really does depend, and it is not for everyone. Purely because some people do not like needles full stop. And again, it can be a great tool, but it's not for everyone. As I said, the best thing in the day is using your hands, but it is very interesting, I suppose, how people can really respond to it. That's for sure.
Absolutely. And even though this is more acupuncture, that just reminded me of a very intense reaction I had from another acupuncture session, where I think I had a lot of bottled up emotion that day, or building up, and I was studying full time, like hectic stress. And that acupuncture session was completely different to the last one. And however, it was still really good, but I started bawling my eyes out.
Yeah.
Not really to the pain, but more just, it just did something. Like, I can't explain it. And they had to, I obviously sat there, had the needles in for a while. We did the session, and then when they came back in, I'm trying not to like have them break down. But at the same time, it was so like cleansing. It was cathartic. Yeah. It was so nice. But coming back to the needling, I wanted to touch on the term knots. Because when I did, Mayo, we learned that it's more like the trigger points.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. But everyone says, oh, I've got these knots. So everyone has this idea that their muscle becomes bound in knots. Can you just clarify
debunk that?
Debunk that.
Sure. So, I mean, that's usually the easiest way people think about it is knots. But the best way I like to describe it is the muscle. It's like a taut band. So with the tissue, whether it be the fascia, which is the connective tissue, or the muscle itself, your muscles go through areas where they're lengthened and shortened. And generally speaking, when they are tight, they shorten. And sometimes, particularly areas in the muscle where the muscle attaches. So let's say, for example, someone's a pec muscle. The attachment points are on the humerus, the arm, and the sternum, and the clavicle. There's a lot of attachment there. Generally speaking, these trigger points or knots are usually right in the belly of the muscle, which is directly in the center of it, or around these attachment sites. And that's where you get that sort of, there might be restriction or shortening on it. And that's where you suppose those trigger points or knots, you could say, are found. So, you find various, usually you'll see, if you look up like charts and you can see like trigger point charts, and generally you'll see where they are. And they also show that, for example, I mentioned the pec with the attachment to the humerus or the arm, upper arm. So for example, a tight or a tender spot near that area could get sort of referred sensation or down the arm, given where that's where the attachment is. So if you're asking me, I don't know if I answered it 100% my answer to it.
No, absolutely. Because, you've definitely debunked the fact that your muscles haven't tied themselves in knots. But you've explained more about the fact that it's more of like an area of that muscle that's become, how would you explain?
Short.
Shortened. Exactly. That's right. So you're trying to lengthen those sarcomeres, is it?
Lengthening it.
Yeah.
Lengthening also the fat, like the tissue, the fascia as well, and that by then, you know, it's increasing things like range of motion, and obviously subsiding pain as well.
And I remember when we would work on each other in our class, finding each other's trigger points, and it's insane.
That would have been fun for some.
You know, even getting inside the jaw, like, you know, that some of those are painful. And it's amazing, you know, like you look at these chart and it tells you how to locate that particular trigger point, and it is there, it is right there. And whether or not you've got a problem with that, you know, you'll know about it.
Yeah, 100%.
Wow. All right. So let's go back to, you know, when you started. What made you get into this area? Because obviously, even though they're different fields, PT and myo, they still have very, you know, some similarities and they complement each other. What was it about you that made you get into that?
It was definitely a passion and love, I suppose, for exercise and just being active and health and fitness. So growing up, I was always, I always loved sports, and I was just someone that I kind of struggled at school in the sense that I wasn't someone that could just sit down all day or sit at a desk. I think I learned that more growing up between the oldies and going into like university, and probably because the areas I studied, they were very practical ways of learning, as you probably know what you studied as well. So it wasn't just sitting in a classroom just taking notes, like particularly in, you know, my course when I was studying as a minor therapist, the I can't remember what you call the class, like flipped classrooms, where in very, very practical sense, you know, it wasn't just you're just sitting at a desk, you're moving around, you're doing things. And I think that's why I loved PE or physical education, particularly because like it was just so much. It was more, you know, obviously it's very exercise related, but it was a very practical subject as well, and that's why I think those sort of practical subjects, or that's always grew my interest. And I guess another thing as well, being a bit younger, I was always quite a skinny kid as well, and I guess I had like a lot of, I suppose, through my sports I played as well, and a lot of good mentors that kind of got me really into the gym. And I was lucky I had an older brother as well that forced me, like literally forced me to come to the gym with him because he wanted me to get stronger. So I actually think, if anything, it was more, I suppose, also the passions that I mentioned, but also actually my older brother, I've got to give him a lot of credit.
Aww.
He'll probably like me saying that. Like, he'll be like, you know, but so I knew pretty quickly that's the area in terms of, I always knew fitness. I was going to be, whatever job I had, it wasn't going to be a desk job, and it was going to be some sort of practical job. And then when I found out, I suppose, as a teenager, that, you know, you could get paid or earn a living, you know, make a career of, you know, exercise and fitness, that's what I suppose led me down that path. And obviously it led me there. And I suppose how the Myo sort of slowly tied in is finding, I guess, a passion for recovery and some appreciation as well. Like playing a lot of sports, doing a lot of activity, realizing how important it was. And I also was one of those, I love to learn as well, so I didn't think I knew enough. So I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great to combine the two, or they would work really well together? And they have. And they're quite interchangeable in the way that they work. They apply so well in different settings. And, you know, whether, obviously, you know, more in a gym, you're in a gym setting, more in a clinical setting. But just being able, I suppose, to have I guess be a bit multi-skilled, be able to offer your clients, I guess, a wide variety of, you know, treatment tool, you know, like thing you can offer your clients more. So that was
And one question I did really want to ask you, because obviously you're someone who was born to be in this profession. You know, you loved the fitness, you loved moving. Do you know if have you ever looked at research that shows that there's a genetic trait to love exercise? That would be interesting to look at because, I mean, I'm sure we know that sports, certainly you can see that it can sometimes run in families, but that can just be more of like a positive influence that's passed down the line. But are there certain genes that are switched on that actually do still predispose you? Because you even said like you just always had that urge.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good point about schooling as well, is that again, because we're both holistic practitioners, sure. we look at schooling in the same way, that it shouldn't be a cookie cutter approach for every student, because yeah. not everyone learns the same way. We know that we have different learning styles. So obviously that was the case for you. I was the same.
No, absolutely. And it's funny now, it's like, obviously it's changed a lot now, like school, being my younger brother, he's a primary school teacher, and he's even told me just how different the learning is, because like everyone's different, you know, you have more recognised people have like special needs and as well. And so obviously the way things have been taught are a lot different, but yeah, I knew I was always one of those people. I was more of a visual learner as well. And that's probably another thing as well. So I kind of found that's why I suppose those sort of seeing things are more like a practical learner as opposed to just, audience taking it all in, and which is what school mostly is. Yeah.
So it sounds like with you, you know, so for some people, some personal trainers or people that get into the health profession, they often have like this really strong health story that like they had to overcome something, but doesn't sound like that was for you, right? Would I be?
That's a good point. I wouldn't say directly, yeah, I didn't have, I suppose, a story or like something like that. Maybe in the sense, I suppose, I wasn't a very confident kid. I was quite introverted. So in some ways, I think sport and health and exercise, it kind of was a bit of a release. It kind of actually opened me up a little bit in a sense. So I think it got me more confident as well, which I think for a lot of people, it's one big great. That's why I suppose health exercise is so important, you know, confident levels and raising your self-esteem and whatnot. So that was probably a real, so I wouldn't say necessarily a story. I think along my journey, there definitely has been, probably like one of my biggest ones was a couple of years ago, was my knee reconstruction. Because I think that kind of humanized me a little bit, and it made me sort of realize that, you know, I'm not, I'm not like indestructible. Like I've had little injuries and setbacks. I've played a lot of sports, but that was a really hard one because it was actually the first time I really, it was hard because I've never been in that position. I feel like I can put myself in client's shoes now, because now I know what it's like to have a big setback, to have a surgery or to have like, not be able to do things wouldn't be able to do, and kind of gain a bit more of an appreciation as well. So,
Absolutely. I can relate with that, having had a knee reconstruction. And when it comes to your own clients, are there any really big success stories that come to mind of people that you've helped and how they started out and then where they are now?
I've had some that have seen me where they've never stepped foot in the gym once or not, like, and they probably wouldn't have thought exercise was their like passion or like. So whether or not it was more of them, I suppose, prioritizing their health over their work and whatnot, you know, had clients with a big weight loss, losing a lot of weight as well.
So with those people that you said that had never stepped foot into exercise before, is it now like a priority for them?
It's absolutely a priority for them.
That's such a positive.
No, absolutely. And it's makes you feel so good as well. Like that's what, you know, you love about your job, and what you do is when you, I suppose, you can see, you know, inspire people. And
because you're literally adding years onto their life, it's going to be a better quality of life, and you could be changing the generational flow on effect as well for that family. And
absolutely,
you know, that's a huge thing that you cannot underestimate.
No,
it's amazing.
You're right.
Okay, so I've got a couple of other juicy questions for you.
Okay.
First of all, as a PT, what's the biggest challenge that people face that you see? What are some of the limitations that you constantly hear and you're just like, oh, God, yeah, this old chestnut?
I think the biggest ones is people, I suppose, they treat their, like, their own health and fitness, and how they don't prioritize it. And
guilty.
I think we all do it in some ways, but I suppose, you know, like, you think people, like, they really care about, like, they take their work seriously, they take all this, but then when it comes to, like, their own health, it just gets shelved. And I find that that's probably the one thing I find really unique. Like, I've been fortunate enough, you know, this is my career, it's my job. So obviously I know, I guess I got a little bit of it when I was injured in terms of my motivational levels. And I get frustrated if I don't train because I'm in the gym every day. So I know straight away, I'm like, if I'm walking, like, what am I doing? I'm here, I'm not training. So I think that's probably one of the biggest ones for sure is, I suppose, people not prioritizing themselves.
How do you make people prioritize themselves? What's your secret?
What's my secret?
Or do we have to pay you for it? I honestly want to know your secret because it's an area that I genuinely struggle in. I've loved exercise.
Mm.
I love physical activity. Obviously, I make sure everyone's doing some form. With that said, I find myself getting sucked into that little warp again of getting comfortable at home and not wanting to leave, and you know, I hate the cold and all those bloody excuses.
But that's what it is. Yeah. It's more. It's having an excuse.
Mm.
And it's a great thing. With Marina, we were both, you know, friends with. One of the great things she said, I guess people not setting like the sort of like non-negotiables. And
I loved that when she said that.
Yeah, and that was something like, that's a big one. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a real big one for me. Like, it's always, I suppose, having excuses. But even so, I think the other big thing as well is when anyone comes in, you need to find what their goal is,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it doesn't come out straight away.
Mm.
You can have someone come to you, and for me, that the big one is I like to get it in their own words. Mm. Even if it's someone that comes in, I know, for example, they want to lose weight, I want to hear them say it.
Mm.
It's not, I don't want to assume that because someone, maybe they might not even know what it is. Maybe they might think, I just want to go to the gym because I just want to be active. I don't know, like, I think it's something good to do. I literally have someone say, I just think I should probably do it.
Yeah.
But they don't actually really have a goal, so.
Or they can't, they actually know it, but they're not being honest with themselves.
Yeah, it's not being honest, not being accountable. So that's definitely one. And then I suppose the other big thing, and that's probably the issue, I suppose, now industry is these sort of cookie cutter approaches. And because it's just, you know, it's great that there's so much information, but there's just so much out there. And I think a lot of people seem to think there's an easy way, that there's some shortcut, some magic, and that's what you asked for my secret is, there's not like some, there's like some special way, like, it comes down to hard work and how much, and actually doing the work and putting in the work.
Mm.
That's the biggest thing.
And I also think, if I can speak for you, because I know you wouldn't say this about yourself, but, you know, obviously, first of all, you've been in this profession for a while, so you're obviously doing something right, but maybe the secret, in air quotation marks, is actually you as a person, you know. So there are, for example, there are some naturopaths who, you know, they're not terrible, but they just don't have that way of being able to really inspire and motivate their client into being able to do what they want them to do.
Sure.
Whereas someone else might be just, you know, their biggest fan and like cheering for them on the side, but also giving them that, that like just the right amount of pressure to be like, come on, like we need to do this.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Maybe that's the secret, is you as a really good PT, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fair assessment?
A pretty fair assessment.
And I have to go back to that point about Marina. So just for you, for your listeners, so you're aware. So Marina Martic, who Greg interviewed on his last podcast, I also used to work with her. She's a clinical nutritionist. And when Greg interviewed her, the one thing that I loved that she said was, you have to set those non-negotiables.
Yes.
Like it's like cleaning your teeth in the morning. Like this has to be this habit that is just non-negotiable. And I remember when I used to, just as a really quick backstory, I lost up to 18 kilos at one point when I started my health journey. And granted, I've put a little bit back on, but I did probably go a bit far the other way. Yeah. Anyway, I loved exercise so much that even when I was at work and I went to the toilet, I would do like 10 push-ups out the back. Like I just was like, I need to do something
now.
You know, I was so addicted to it. Mm. And to be honest, I want to get that addiction again. And just interviewing you, I think, is helping to inspire me.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's, you're going to have to hold me accountable.
No, absolutely.
Okay. So another hurdle that I personally have and other people have when they see a PT is you know, in the first week, they're super motivated and they're just like, yep, I'm going to commit to this. I'm going to come see you every week for the next 3 months. And they're so motivated. Come week three, they're like, I don't want to do it anymore. Mm. Like, what is that? What's going on there? Is that, can you tell me? And how do you overcome it?
That's interesting. Yeah, that's true. It does, you do kind of get that. And even, you know, all gyms I've worked at is, yeah, you get that client that will come in and, you know, they seem super committed and they dive really like straight in. They, like they said, they do 4 or 5 sessions a week and then they kind of, before you know it, they just drop off out of nowhere.
Mm.
It's always a bit of a funny one. Like, I guess in some ways, or maybe they kind of rush into it a little bit as well. It's probably something that I'm real big on, you know, when training clients.
Hey, I just wanted to quickly interrupt as I've got a really special offer for you that ends this month. With the sun now shining and the flowers blooming, now's that time of year you start to reevaluate your health as we approach summer. Now, there's a lot of spring cleansers or weight loss programs out there around this time of the year, but unfortunately, many of them are either not backed by qualified professionals, are unsustainable, or really expensive. However, I have something better for you and you can literally start right now. My successful 4-week detox program is now on sale and I want you to get your hands on it. This fully comprehensive liver detox is nothing like the uneducated fads abusing the word detox. No, no, no. This very detox plan is the same in-depth evidence-based program I prescribe for my pain clients and it's very easy to follow. The program includes a step-by-step guide, reveals loads of suggested food hacks, includes a very comprehensive list of exactly what foods to include and exclude, and it even includes what household products you should be avoiding on a detox as well. It includes how to overcome those pesky sugar cravings, a prep cheat sheet to make sure you have everything you need, tips on mindfulness, and if that wasn't enough, you also get free access to me in our private Facebook group. To grab your copy, head to jadewalker.com.au where it's currently on sale down from $47 to just $17. Even better, you can afterpay it for just $4.25 for your first payment. But you better hurry because I'll be pulling the plug on this offer very soon.
I try to, like, I want to make sure we got to walk before we can run. I don't expect us to run into it and that's probably a real big one as well, because you might get some people that haven't exercised in years or done any activity, and then you're starting them right from the get-go, you know, jumping the 5 days. So someone doing, let's say, no training a week to then jumping 5 training sessions a week, it's a big change. And it can, and obviously it's a lifestyle change, to be honest. It's really changed your routine, and I think that's probably a real big one. So for me, I suppose it would be not starting slow, but I suppose, I guess being a little bit mindful of things like their effort levels. It's something I always keep on checking. I like to actually usually ask people to rate the session, my training sessions as well.
That's so good.
Straight off the bat. So then that way I can always gauge. Because that's the other thing, is I may think that the session was a 6 out of 10. Let's say in a rating, but then they tell me it's a 10 out of 10. But obviously I don't know how I'm training. So keeping them accountable. And then it's just, I suppose, the constant communication as well. You've got to, and that's why it's so good, you know, these days when you have, you know, phones. You know, I try to always, you know, text my clients, touch base them all the time. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that sort of stuff as well is you've got to, it's all about building relationships, that what we do at the end of the day.
100%.
That's the most important thing, if any. You've got to build that rapport. You know, you have people that will come to you and they, you know, might feel quite vulnerable, or they might, you know, what they're going through, their personal sort of health issues, and you've got to, I suppose, be quite empathetic, quite understanding, and you've got to, you just got to constantly keep communicating, touching base with them, especially if it's depending on what the goal is, of course, and not as motivated. Yeah, you just got to keep on top of them, and, you know, hopefully once they make it a habit and then whatnot. But I think that's probably the biggest thing, is it's they probably in some ways drop off. Maybe they just find it's too hard, or
the expense can sometimes get to them as
well. So you just got to constantly keep communicating, reminding them why they're here.
Mm.
And have those honest conversations, in the sense that, like, if you feel like they need to do, they're only doing 2 sessions and, you know, they need to do 4, tell them, be upfront, be honest of it. Because that could be the other thing as well. It's like then they're trying to find an excuse, like, oh, well, you know, oh, maybe, you know, it's too expensive, or, and they put other things in front of them, priorities. So
that's the thing, isn't it? You've actually got to reframe your vocabulary. Instead of saying, I can't afford this, instead say to yourself, this isn't a priority in my budget. How does that sound to say? Does that sit well with you to say, oh, I would rather spend my money on a new handbag instead of get myself healthy?
Yeah.
Because that's the reality of what people are actually doing.
It's all about needing and wanting as well. That's the other thing too.
Yeah, it's just reframing that. And I think any good practitioner can help people figure that out as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Greg, I have to ask you, why do PTs make people miss their sleep-ins? Like, that was the thing I hated the most. I'm like, I'm not getting up at 7 a.m. Like,
yeah.
Why are you so cruel to us?
I know, right? I think sometimes I'm cruel to myself. But, we just love our early mornings. We're just, you know, we go-getters. We love to start the day well, so...
Do you think that comes part and parcel with beginning to love exercise? You do start to appreciate getting up early and doing those things?
I think so, yeah, in some way. I mean, everyone, I suppose, is different when they like to exercise and train, but a lot of it for most people, given that most people work sort of 9-to-5 jobs, is, I mean, the majority prefer to kind of get it all done in one way. They feel they start the day well. It's all about starting the day well.
Mm.
And whether, you know, it's getting up, going straight to the gym, being active. Mm. Doesn't have to be the gym, could be any sort of activity, but I think that's probably the real biggest one. That's probably why the sleep in doesn't happen, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I know, I've seen some classes at 5 a.m. I'm like, really? Like, that means I have to get up at 4 a.m, which is just nuts. Like, but I do appreciate that on those rare occasions where I have forced myself to get up, your day is epic once you've started it with exercise. And there is research that does demonstrate that it's more beneficial to exercise in the morning. And I'm sure you're aware of this as well in terms of continuously burning fat. You know, as you know, you don't stop burning the moment you step off the treadmill.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. So there's so many benefits with that. It reduces your cravings throughout the day. There's so many benefits.
That's actually a very good point. Yeah, as far as being in the evening, or people who, I guess if you're some training really, really late as well, having your metabolisms constantly going. You know, they always talk about, you know, things like breakfast being the most important meal of the day as well. So having that supportive, you know, being up and moving.
So the next question I wanted to ask you, obviously this podcast being quite female dominant, I would say, in the listeners, obviously a lot of women feel insecure, and ironically, even though everyone needs to start somewhere, there's that weird thing that women tell themselves that, oh, I'm too, in quotation marks, big to go to the gym, or I'm not fit enough to go see a PT. And it's just strange because that's what you're obviously going there for. Like,
that's a good point.
You know, what do you say to women, or even men as well? I know men also have insecurities as well. What do you say to people who feel that?
I suppose, you know, people see like, you know, fitness magazines, and they, you know, they feel like they've got a, you know, sort of look a certain way or be a certain way. And I find it's very strange as well. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It is.
And also because sometimes we might feel intimidated by our own PT. You know, we feel intimidated that, oh, they're so fit, they're going to be judging me. Like, it's just these ridiculous things that go through your brain that aren't true, because obviously as a PT you're there to help people with those goals. But there are so many people who don't go because they genuinely feel that way.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think that sort of intimidation, it sort of depends, you know, depending on just the gym setting, like, you know, people, that's why, I think people who do like their classes, maybe they think they won't be the fittest one, or, you know, it's only for fit people. I suppose that it's just all about knowing, you know, everyone's got their own sort of like health journey. Everyone's on their own different path. That's probably the real big thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So obviously coming up to summer, whenever the hell that will be, because it feels like this has been a long winter.
even now, I'm dressed in track. I thought it was going to be a cold day, and anyway.
Yeah, like, but it, you know, it's spring, and I still feel like it's too cold. But anyway,
yeah.
So you know, often when we haven't been to the gym for a while, because you know, let's face it, the new season of Stranger Things came out, and then Big Little Lies came out, and so like we're just having binges on TV, haven't been in the gym for a while, and we know that summer's coming, and we know that we're going to be getting our legs out, and we're going to start wishing that we had put wheels into motion.
Yes.
What advice can you give people to just like get up? Get the gym gear on or whatever it is and just go and do something right now and start.
You know what? What you just said is that's probably the real big one straight away. It's, I think something like, you know, don't wait for some sort of, I guess, like New Year's resolution or literally, you know, don't wait till, oh, it's got to be...
Don't wait till Monday.
Yeah, don't wait till Monday or don't feel like there's got to be this certain period, like just start right now. That's probably the biggest one. Right off the bat, just get your shoes on, put your gym gear on, head out the door, and just start. Just being consistent. That just right off the bat. I think that's probably the big one there. I think a lot of people seem to think that you need, like, oh, you've got to wait for this certain moment, and then, like, forget. Just do it.
Yeah.
Like you said, we're in spring now. Just get into a routine. As soon as you start, the easier it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I could not agree more. Just don't think, just do.
100%.
Yeah. And that's the only thing that helps me get over all these bloody excuses that I tell myself. Because I go through that a lot. And, like, my husband's a big gym buff. He loves the gym. And he's forever trying to get me to go. And sometimes I'll get on these little streaks and I'm like, yeah, I'm loving it now. I'm going to go all the time. And then it'll just die off.
Yeah, actually, that's been nothing. I'll tell you, it's with Marina. So she came up some great little quote. But another thing I really liked that she said, and it's something I've thought as well, is that people seem to think that you have to have, I suppose, like the perfect week of training with like stuff you have to have, like, but it's actually not the case. Like sometimes just doing like a little bit every day or just literally just showing up, like that, the biggest battle, that's like half the battle. Like I said, half is just like the alarm clock, you know, to get up out of bed. Once you're here, that's the easy part.
Yeah.
So that's probably like, that's probably the only thing I have to say is that you get past that part, it gets easier and easier every time.
I could not agree more because that's me in a nutshell. The way that my brain will process, right? If I know that I want to go to the gym on Wednesday and I'm at work and I'll be telling myself I'm going to go after work.
Yes.
And I'm ramping it up all day on what I'm going to wear. Should I put my hair up? Like, you know, should I have it in two bloody piggytails?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And then I'll get home and I'll be like, should I have something to eat first or when I, or after? And then I'll stew over that for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it's just like this ridiculous spiral of events. And then I'm like, oh, hang on, I haven't done an Instagram post. Need to quickly do that.
Yeah.
And then I'll get my gym gear out and I'm like, oh, my favorite gym top's in the wash. This top doesn't go with these tights. I don't have any black socks that will go with my black Nikes. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, mismatch your socks.
Sorry?
And I mismatch socks like me.
Nah, like, I'm a bit funny with, like, I don't like to wear white socks with black shoes.
Okay.
Like, and then vice versa. Like, if I were to wear my light blue Nikes, I will only wear white socks with those and not black socks.
Okay.
Like, it's just stupid stuff. I mean, to be honest, there have been days when I'm like, oh, fuck it, I'm just doing it. Like,
sure.
I've got to go. But sometimes I have worked myself up so much with all these stupid little blockages that I've just gone, stuff it, I'm not going.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. Like, and so I think, you know, to combine what you've said and what Marina's said, just show up. And I remember she used to say that to me when we used to work together, when I used to ask her for advice. She'd be like, honestly, just show up.
Yeah.
Even if you just do 5 minutes and go home, that's more than what you would have done.
No, and, 100%, right.
And quite often, you know, like you said, showing up is the hardest part. Once you're there, it's the easiest part is doing the workout. And quite often you say, I'm only going to do 10 minutes, but it feels so good that you're like, I'm going for another 20.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. It's something you feel like, just I wish, like, I want to stay longer, but, like, yeah. You know, I've got other things to do. But that is literally, I think, the biggest one. And that's something in myself. I've gone through those little periods as well where I don't have a little bit, maybe, you know, had a bad night's sleep or maybe I had a little bit of DOMS, you know,
yeah.
I'm feeling a bit sore. But then, as soon as I get in there and, you know, as soon as I've done, within 5 minutes, all that just goes away.
Absolutely. Actually, that just reminded me, DOMS, have you heard of DOFS?
DOFS.
Yeah.
No, I have not.
So,
yeah.
I'd only just heard of this at the start of the year. Have you heard of ATP Science or the ATP Project podcast?
I know of it, yeah.
Yeah. So they do a lot on, like, exercise and bodybuilding and stuff. And they actually believe that DOMS is actually DOFS, so it's fascia, not muscular.
Okay.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? Given you're a myo and you've got a lot of understanding about fascia...
That's actually very interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought about
so
that.
They reckon it's got to do more to with the fascia and not
the
muscles. But with that said, I never learned that. Obviously, you didn't either. So who knows?
No, that's something I would have always thought more directly the muscles. That's actually, yeah, DOFS.
Yeah. And it's funny because I made Ed listen to it with me when we were driving back from SA one day. And now he's sarcastic. He's like, oh, I've got mad DOFS, eh? So funny.
It's
gonna be, I actually kind of
like the
ring. Yeah. So actually, while we're, I've just brought up fascia, I'm sure a lot of people are like, fascia what? What's fascia?
Okay. I think I did touch on it earlier. So fascia is essentially the connective tissue. So for example, probably one of the biggest areas where people get confused or don't know is you hear a term ITB. That's probably the one, you know, I hear all the time because everyone thinks the ITB is a muscle, but it's actually a thick bit of connective tissue. And essentially where this tissue, it runs down pretty much right from your hip all the way to the outside of your knee, and which essentially stabilizes that area as well. So best way I say fascia, it's basically connective tissue.
Yeah. I love the visual descriptive that we were taught, you know, when you have a steak and you pull it apart and you see all that looks like tissue paper
kind of
pulling apart.
Great example.
That's fascia. And it literally wraps in and around everything.
Yeah. That's right.
So do you put a lot of importance on fascia?
I do. And that's one area. Being a myotherapist, if you ever heard of myofascial release or MFR, that's another area we really like to focus on in terms of our treatment is myofascial release. And so a lot of people just sort of think with massage, you're essentially just kind of rubbing or... We used to kind of say in uni that we kind of always used to joke about people who do, I suppose, Swedish massage is doing like skin polishing. that's what we used to say, like people who do like... So, but there are a lot of techniques using tools such as like cupping is probably one of the best ones, for example, because the cups are able to actually really get a hold of the fascia. And you'll find with areas, because the fascia, it runs multiple directions. And obviously, you don't know obviously a little bit of anatomy, but it's amazing how effective it can be in people who have pains or postural issues. Just how you can work on that by loosening or lengthening that sort of that connective tissue. How much of a benefit it can have and really improve someone.
Absolutely. I did a little bit of MFR when I was doing the electives, and so I got my own cupping kit.
Yep.
So exciting.
Old school or?
Like the kind of like the Chinese ones, but like, oh, not the flame ones, but like with the gun thing that sucks it up. Yeah. I wouldn't bother with the lighting.
My has the old school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. No, so anyway, I would sometimes when Ed would have some problems, I'm like, oh, good opportunity to get the cups out. And I would just be like bringing up my lectures, trying to figure out, okay, which muscle is it? How do I find that? Rah, rah, rah. And even just doing that, he found a lot of benefit from it.
Yeah.
And he would often say, oh, I need you to cup my shoulder for me.
Yeah.
And I don't even feel like I completely knew what I was doing, but because you know that you're pulling up that fascia and like lengthening it out.
Right, increasing blood flow to the area. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's probably one of my favorite tools of actually treatments. I love using the cups. I find people use the cups purely a lot of the time just statically, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that's when you commonly see, you know, if you see a guy or a girl pass and they look like, you know, they've attacked by an octopus, or it looked like they've got like the shape of dice on their back, you know. But I actually quite using it a lot for that sort of deep tissue or myofascial work, and I find that it really helps in terms of getting it's not just the blood flow there, but really warming up the tissue, because then when I actually want to do more direct work with my hands, I find getting that heat to the area and that work really helps. Just kind of like primes everything up and does sort of like half the work for me already.
Definitely.
So I don't feel like I'm, you know, having to, you know, use my elbows, my forearm, right off the bat for like, yeah, 10, 20 minutes. I find the cups do all that, you know, take some of that work away like instantly.
Absolutely. That is such a good point with cups, is that they actually do a lot of manual work.
They do. Take it out of your hand.
Yeah. And then relieve like the pressure off your own back.
Correct. Now, obviously, don't get me wrong. Your hands are your best tool, 100%. But you also need to preserve them as well. And that's probably one area where I think a lot of, this is off topic, but a lot of therapists, while a lot of them don't last, is their thumbs. They wear their thumbs to the ground. So you've got to be smart how you teach. And we've always got taught by my lecturers to use your broader tools always. So yeah, it's like your forearms, your elbows. But I suppose using the cups, you're able, I suppose, to one, get that sort of sustained pressure. And that's why things like dry needling and cupping I find are very successful, because you're getting that constant like pressure or tension or where like needles as well, because it's let's say for someone's got a very tight glute, and you know, so not everyone likes getting an elbow put to the glute. I find needles, yes, obviously, you know, when you use the needles, you feel it first, but then it straight away sort of subsides, and then sometimes, you know, you'll probably just forget that it's there, or they're working along, and you'll notice like, oh, I didn't realize I had that was still there, like it instant relief. So that's the thing I really like about the sort of the, if going back to the cups again, it's more about sustained pressure as opposed to, yeah.
And actually, similarly to how we were comparing acupuncture and dry needling, obviously TCM or traditional Chinese medicine cupping is much different to myo cupping as well, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, I must say, because I have actually seen Chinese, like, acupuncturists, and I actually have never experienced cupping.
I haven't experienced the TCM type.
Well, I guess their theory or the way they do it.
So, well, there's a few things, and again, like, I'm certainly not the best person to give advice, but based on what I do know, first of all, sometimes they can leave the cups on for up to half an hour.
Yeah,
okay. Which, obviously, with MFR, you might only be doing it for like 10 seconds or like a minute or, So that's where those people walking around with those big dark purple spots are getting that from the TCM. But also there are some people that say it's, you know, like if someone's sick, it's like drawing toxins out, and I don't know whether I fully believe that theory. Yeah. There's also bloodletting cupping. Have you ever heard of that?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, so where they actually like prick it, then cup it, and then it draws all this blood out. I would not want to do that.
No.
And I've never heard of anyone that does it, but anyway, there's some interesting practices out there.
Absolutely.
I did want to go back to needling quickly.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you said that some people, obviously, it's not for them because they're scared of needles, and a lot of people think that it's going to hurt. But how would you explain what needling feels like?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. Generally, best way to describe it, for most people, because with the skin, obviously, you have a superficial layer, you have deep, but you have layers of the skin. So it's very, the technique's probably the biggest one. You'll find, let's say, acupuncturists, you'll probably see how they use, if you haven't, they kind of really like tap them.
Yeah, yeah.
And that can be quite catch you a bit off guard.
Oh, yeah.
Especially depending on what areas you're working on, like generally speaking, like for example, so like the glutes, you naturally will guard. What I mean by guard is you'll kind of tense up naturally.
Yeah.
And that's just how, so I suppose initially what you'll usually feel is just like a little bit of a prick, but it also depends on the layer. So for example, the glute, there's also a lot of tissue there. So that area, for example, or your paraspinals along the sort of spine, there are areas you probably wouldn't feel as much. Whereas if I was going, let's say, in a really superficial layer, such as through the forearms or the hand or somewhere like that, you'll feel it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on that, but obviously the area, and then also actually the thickness of how the needle is as well.
So you do use different...
that's a really good point. Yeah, very different size needles. So there are ones you get where you're only going very superficially through the skin layer, and those ones you probably will feel them a little bit, just because obviously you break through that first layer of skin. It's just like imagining having like a little nail or like a little needle, like a sewing needle, and just like that's what you'll feel initially. But if done properly, where you actually take different techniques, such as, and I'm going to imitate them, no, we'll see.
Joy of podcast.
Joy of podcast, yeah. So like actually stretching the skin helps. There's little areas like that.
Ah, interesting.
Ways of helping the client sort of relax. And
yeah.
You commonly feel like a little, I guess sometimes like a little bit of a sharp, a little bit of a sharp prick. And then it can be nothing. And then where you'll then maybe start to feel, depending on whether they've hit, I guess, one of those sort of knots or trigger points we were discussing, is we like to call like fishing for it. So that's when they're essentially trying, depending on how long the needle is, you know, the one rule of thumb is you never want to put them, bring the needle all the way in. So, and that reason being is for the risk of the needle breaking or something like that, or snapping. You have to be pretty careless to do it, but it can happen. That's why you always want to leave like a little bit of space. So you find the needles, even though let's say that it's a 30 millimeter needle, these needles are not very big, so they can range from about sort of 10 millimeters to 70 millimeters. But a lot of it, the majority of it, it's just the handle itself. So it's not like very much, but it's actually going through. So I always tend to think that it's like puncturing you in like this, where you're going in a bit. It really is. I mean, there are obviously some areas of the body where it can, in the sense that depending on which areas you're working, you're trying to go to the bone. So for example, you know, areas like your quadriceps, you're probably like one of the best areas to needle because you can literally go perpendicular. You're actually trying to aim physically for the bone. They're trying to actually recall like...
That freaks people out.
It sounds creepy, yeah. But then the other thing is, well, depending on area, but if that's one area. But then if you're working anywhere along your torso, you've got to keep in mind you've got your lungs. That's probably the big, or your lip, your kidneys, things like the areas like... Where, and that's why you'll see they're not actually even that deep. They have to go on angles.
Yeah.
So it really depends on, to go back to sort of what it feels like, it kind of actually depends on the area you're needling as well. Because areas which are more, so safe areas to needle for it, what I mean by that is, one, obviously areas where you have your things like your lungs and whatnot, but then also areas such as, you know, veins, arteries. That there's a lot of areas like that we call like, you know, red flag no-go zones, areas you've got to avoid.
And this is obviously the importance why you see a qualified practitioner.
Well, that's right. And that probably the biggest mistake, or where you see probably the most risk with dry needling, is when people are doing the torso, anywhere on the body, just due to the fact that they go too perpendicular.
Yes.
So.
Like, I must say, from the 2 times I've had acupuncture and the 1 time I've had dry needling, you know, for the most part, it doesn't hurt that much at all.
No,
I don't
even feel it. Sometimes.
Yeah, and especially when it is more superficial, it's just like this little boop. Like, it's just, yeah, it's a tiny little tap. And, you know, the needles are like, you know, hair size. Like, they're just so thin. Yeah. However, like the one time I did feel it when I had acupuncture and they were going like right along that thoracic spine, and I actually heard, because this was at the student clinic and the lecturer was coming in and kind of directing, going closer to the bone, and I'm like, fuck no. anyway,
oh,
like
my God,
that
yeah.
freaked me out, and I could feel this like weird thread like going through, and it was just bizarre because you'd never felt it before.
That's really funny you just mentioned that.
Yeah,
because I remember I've mentioned the classes that I've been in, do those like long ones, there were a few times where I won't name names, there were certain people I suppose that were probably a little careless, the fact they kind of I like the thought that my veins and areas are pretty more visible, But like, yeah, areas where like, yeah, you'd hear like the whisper, like the lecturer sound like, oh, probably a little too fine, or, oh, you know, next time be careful, you could have hit the,
I'm
lying face down. And the worst thing is you're lying face down, obviously, you know, you can't obviously see.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, fingers crossed, like, oh, God, I hope he's doing the right thing. Or,
oh, and, you know, another thing as well, like with acupuncture, like they leave the room and they leave you to lay there for a while. And like, because I was so interested, like,
I don't like that.
I wanted to check it out, like I wanted to see, but they obviously said like don't move anything, you know, while they stay still in. Oh my gosh, so I moved my hand and I had one in my hand and it hurt like a bitch because it was in like, you know, what I felt like deep, and so when I moved this like needle, this inside my hand moved as well. It was gross.
Yeah. It's very crazy. There are some I've actually seen some practice like treatments, probably more sort of the acupuncture, where they actually people leave the needles physically inside.
Oh, wow.
On the actual day-to-day moving stuff.
Whoa, that's next level.
Yeah, I find that's really next level.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. We've certainly unpacked needling, haven't we?
Literally have.
Yeah. I hope people now understand more about myo, and they obviously want to, I hope that they also will consider it in their treatment plans as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been... been a very insightful episode. Done a great job.
Oh, good. Thank you. So the last thing I want to ask you is, if there was one thing you could change in the healthcare system, what would it be and how would you do it? Is there anything that you get frustrated by seeing sometimes and you're like, I just wish that they focused more on this in the healthcare system? Or
I think probably one of the biggest challenges that we face, whether it be myos, naturopaths, even fitness training as well, it's probably a bit more regulation. Probably one of the biggest ones. You know, having probably a, you know, like I guess how chiropractors, osteopaths, having that sort of like one body. That's probably one of the biggest ones, and unfortunately, I don't think there'll be any. Good, like these sort of changes to happen. There's obviously a lot of other little things, but I think that all starts from the top in that sort of sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just that's probably the frustrating thing is, I'd say fitness is probably the worst, is that it's very oversaturated and there's just so many, because it's so easy now to get a cert through a cert four in fitness. I suppose also make. We've even touched a bit on it as well. I suppose everyone's sort of like working together in a sort of sense, like
that collaborative care.
Sort of more collaborative care. Like I find a lot of practitioners, they're trying to go out of their sort of scope of practice. A lot, and that's probably I've seen that a lot. Even fitness is probably the worst one, because you get people that, you know, they, you know, I've seen, you know, gym, fitness trainer, they're trying to do like chiropractic manipulations, like things like that, or, you know, try and do like a little bit of massage with their client, like just and that stuff can be like a bit frustrating, you know, especially obviously, you know, when you're the actual practitioner.
I must say, you know, the other one that we get frustrated as naturopaths when we hear about PTs prescribing practitioner supplements.
Yes, that's another one.
That's so frustrating, and especially because they're not getting the whole other part of it that's meant to come along with when you prescribe something. There needs to be, okay, first of all, why are you taking this? What's your condition? Like, do you have any allergies, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, that can be extremely frustrating. Have you ever heard of any people calling themselves a myotherapist who aren't a myotherapist?
Maybe not myotherapist.
PTs.
But maybe they wouldn't say directly I'm a myotherapist, but they'll say they're like some sort of, you know, they do some sort
body
of like
work,
soft
something.
Tissue. Yeah, body work or something fluffy, or, you know, some bullshit title. I don't know. It's like something like that. That's probably one of the, I'd probably say that one. And then the only other one I can really think of, because I suppose it's very relevant to us, is, you know, with our sort of alternative medicines, I suppose with the, because there's always seems to be very like constant change and like things like health rebates and things like that as well. So,
can you get a rebate with private health insurance for myo?
With myo, you still can. Yes.
Really? Because they took it away from that.
They did. So myo's, they did actually take it away, and there was I'm sure there was. There was a massive pushback, and obviously there was something that we really, a lot of people were very campaigned about, and they actually put us back on. But that's always something. And that, I suppose, goes to the regulation. The issue now is because it doesn't help when you have different, like Melbourne, you know, school like Southern School and Endeavour College, and they have, you know, there's a musculoskeletal therapist, you've got the advanced diploma of myotherapy, and then you've got a clinical myotherapy. It's all the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And
there needs to be more consistency.
There needs to be more consistency. Yeah. So I think having that sort of like one, that's probably the other thing that's not helping as well. And so we kind of need to show that we're sort of like this one more, like one body.
You know, as a naturopath, it's the most exhausting thing is defending what we do by pointing out that because, you know, the reason why I asked, you know, are there people that call themselves a Myo who's not one? Because there are heaps of people that call themselves a naturopath who aren't one.
Yeah.
And often when it seems like there's this yearly round of naturopath bashing that comes out in the media. It's like they've got it in their diary ready to go. Like, oh, it's May the 1st, time to do a skeptical article.
Yes.
But whenever they bring up a story on a phony naturopath, it's always one who first of all didn't do any kind of training, and they sure as hell weren't accredited with some sort of body. We all feel that same pain where we just want regulation.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. With that said, I know some practitioners don't want regulation because there's also some issues that come with that, because it's like, how tightly will our hands be tied? You know, will there be certain things we can't do anymore?
Yeah.
So it's, but at the same time, I think if I had to pick one, 100% I'd pick regulation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's absolutely, that's where I would go. Yeah.
So Greg, it's been so good having you on. I think we've really opened up so many amazing topics here that hopefully people will be able to take home with them. If people do want to learn more from you or even work with you, what's the best way they can do that?
To get in touch or reach out? Yeah, absolutely. So probably through my Instagram. So that is g_alexander21. Certainly find me through social media. I'm pretty savvy on that these days. So there, Facebook as well, through Gregory Alexander. And then obviously where you can find me, South Melbourne. So Revolution Personal Training, just off Market Street. So yeah, they're probably the best ways through, I guess, social media and the gym.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and
My pleasure. We
look forward to seeing everyone's feedback from today's show.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. If you love today's episode, give us a holler by taking a screenshot of this episode and tagging us on Instagram at Jade Walker Health. If you haven't already, make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review to show some love and help this podcast grow. To continue the thought-provoking discussion on today's episode or anything natural and healthy living, join us inside the Jade Walker Way community Facebook group by simply searching the Jade Walker Way community. For loads more healthy info, head to jadewalker.com.au. I'll see you next time. Thank you.